Good afternoon, Tampa Bay, and welcome to Between the Lines. This is episode 3. I'm Jake here with Tristan. We are in our Body Armor Coca-Cola studios here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, America's number one local sports bar as voted by USA Today.
Across from Tropicana Field, which is getting rebuilt as we speak.
Yeah, I think up to 13 panels now, huh?
I think so. It's 13 or 14, somewhere in that range.
I believe 24. Yeah,
24
total. It's getting there. It's getting there. You know, there's a lot of time left before the season, but it's, I mean, hopefully it gets done. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Between the Lines Show and on TikTok at Between the Lines Hour. Now, I hear you have a hot take for me.
Yeah, and this is one that, you know, kind of going back to our week one, our first episode. I said week one like it's a schedule.
I mean, it kind of is.
It kind of is. Going week by week.
You could put it into that.
But going back to week one, our first episode, his hot take was centered around a discussion that we had had going on for weeks, right? And this is a discussion that we've had reoccurring between our friend group exactly after the moment that it happened. And my hot take concerns Mike Evans. Mike Evans and his ability to return back to the game of football after that injury that he suffered on the Monday Night Football game versus the Detroit Lions, you know, in Detroit. He broke his collarbone and he was concussed in the same play. And my hot take is that if Mike Evans decides to return to football, it will not be this season. And the reason that I say that, and I say this season, because, one, obviously, if he's going to miss in excess of, like, 6 games, he's already not going to break his record of, you know, the 12,000-yard season breaking Jerry Rice's record. He's already tied Jerry Rice. He's already pretty much the common consensus is that he's a first-ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think he necessarily needs to rush back from this injury and get back on the field to prove himself, because he's been proving himself for 11 seasons. And one more thing to mention with that whole discussion is, not only did he break his collarbone, which many wide receivers, when they break an important bone or they break something happens to them that could affect their throwing, they don't always typically come back the same way or in the same strength. You know, you've seen guys in their prime get big injuries like that, big bone breaks, and they don't even come back in the next 3 seasons like they were showing that one time. Almost like Chris Godwin, if you look at his injury from last season.
Both happened in a week 7 Monday Night Football game, by the way.
Yeah, which is
prime time.
There's something against week 7 Monday Night primetime games.
Yeah. Take
for
us
the
off.
Buccaneers. Yeah. I don't ever want to see a Buccaneers primetime game on,
take,
you know, in week
off.
7 Monday
that,
night.
That is just horrible.
But yeah, in addition to that, he was also concussed on that same play. And so you have to look at the mental aspect of, you know, will he be mentally, you know, Mike Evans is a very tough individual, but will he mentally be strong enough to return back to NFL football after, you know, already mentally he broke his collarbone, which affects his throwing and that mental part of it, but then also the concussion part of it where, you know, he doesn't know if the next hit that he takes could put him in, you know, a long-term place he doesn't want to be.
Now, some parts you said there I can get and kind of agree with. You know, I do think that that concussion is honestly probably the worst part of that injury. You saw when he went down, it didn't look like he was grabbing a bone or grabbing anything. It looked like he was just kind of almost knocked out. I believe I heard that he was unconscious for a little bit. Don't quote me on that, though. But, you know, when you get a concussion that's that bad and you have to get carted off the field, not because, I mean, we saw him walk off, mm-hmm. but then later was carted off probably because, you know, he was so dizzy.
Yeah.
And they obviously didn't want him. You could see him kind of on the sideline just almost in a blank stare. Just kind of, that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think the concussion is definitely the worst part of the injury. But, you know, we saw with Luke Getteke even last year, the concussion for him didn't look too bad and he was out, what, 3, 4, 5 weeks, somewhere around
something
that
like
range.
That, yeah.
So it's just, I mean, you know, concussions can obviously be very bad, but I don't think there's a single scenario other than the concussion where Mike Evans doesn't return to play this year, especially with the Bucs and, you know, the situation to where they're probably going to the playoffs. You know, it's just, it's clear to me that Mike Evans will come back as long as we can make a playoff.
If he does return, do you see a guardian cap in Mike Evans' future?
That's a good question. We saw with Luke Getteke last year after he had a bad one. I'm almost concerned maybe for more that with the Bucks, they would kind of force him to maybe wear a guardian cap. As I mean, we don't know if they did with Luke Getteke, but there's definitely a question to where he would wear one, because that concussion was pretty bad, and they definitely don't want that to.
If you watch the clip itself, he does hit the ground very hard. You can see the moment when like his head, you know, was concussed.
The Lions defender pulled him to the ground, which somehow didn't get called for PI. But we'll talk about that later, because there is a lot to talk about with that Bucks game officiating wise. But at the end of the day, they played bad.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that later. I'm going to get into my hot take here. And this is a take that I feel like is pretty split between everybody, and it regards the MLB and the salary cap.
Okay.
I think
first baseball take on Between the Lines hot take.
Is it?
Yes, it is our first hot take on the show.
My hot take is that a salary floor is more needed than a salary cap. Now, I feel like that's a take that's pretty, you know, split between people. There's a lot of people that look at the A's and they're like, they're the problem because they won't go out and they won't try to sign these guys. And then a lot of people look at the Dodgers because as soon as you, you know, you build this superstar roster, you're able to just sign all these guys. And the more you sign, the more that want to come to you, because the better of a team and the higher odds they have at winning a World Series.
Yeah, I think that's true. But then it kind of goes back to our discussion last week of talking about, you know, the Dodgers after their win. I forget exactly who it was, but, you know, let's win four more games. And
Dave Roberts.
Baseball. Dave
the
Roberts.
Head coach.
I do think that a salary floor would assist the game. I think it would get more viewership in. I think more people would respect the game overall, especially from other sports that have salary caps. But I still kind of do think that it would change the trajectory of baseball as kind of we know it. But I think it would also solidify baseball as a fair sport if there was a salary cap instead of a salary floor. And I think that is a lot for people to accept right now, especially diehard baseball fans, especially fundamentalists in baseball. But I honestly, in my heart of hearts, I think that a salary cap should be the end goal for the commissioner and MLB and, you know, all of that. But yeah, going back to the salary floor, I do. What's the current minimum once you get bumped up from AAA?
Like the minimum MLB salary for players, it's around $780,000, and it gets increased and changed every year, but it's around that margin right now.
Okay, that makes sense. And so what would you, as a kind of extension of your hot take, what if you were the commissioner right now, what would your salary floor be for the MLB?
Now, that's actually something that I was going to bring up to you. So it gets a little complicating, because you could say something like every MLB team needs to spend $150 million, which is very obviously a very high number. There's only, you know, I don't have a number, but probably half the league spends that much, maybe probably less.
Less than the Rays don't.
Oh, yeah, no, nowhere close. But, you know, the problem with it is every MLB team makes a different amount of money in, you know, just overall, just expenditures and everything. You know, so where I'm at is I was thinking about this, and I really think that the MLB should establish a scenario where it's kind of like you have to spend this certain amount of money that you're making on your roster. But where it kind of gets challenging for me is, one, that data would have to become public, and two, it gets complicating with a team like the Rays, who are always, you know, trading away these guys before they get to that point where they kind of fall off. How would the Rays manage this with always bringing up players? You know, they would kind of be forced to either sign a veteran who they know they wouldn't really want just to get to that floor, or they would have to, you know, go out and extend a guy like Junior Caminero or Carson Williams, which is obviously what we all want, but sometimes guys don't want to sign. And what happens when guys don't want to sign with you with a salary floor?
I mean, they
you just find the team and
they just
lose draft picks because nobody wants to go to your team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, at the end of the day, that really is an ownership issue.
Yeah, and it kind of, another extension of that is, do you think it would change the managerial strategy of the current ownership group of the Tampa Bay Rays? Because they kind of said that they were going to continue with Stu Sternberg, the momentum Stu Sternberg had built with his his money management style and managerial style with Eric Neander. They're also keeping Eric Neander. So do you think that would hinder the, you know, Patrick Zalupski and Babby and them and how they would manage the group? Or do you think that they would agree with that and that you think they would go along with it? Because right now it seems like Patrick Zalupski and you know, everyone upstairs for the race currently is trying to hold on to as much funding as they can because they don't know exactly the dollar signs.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't know they're going to make. They don't know how much they're going to make right now either. Because I mean, this is their
especially coming back to the trot for the first year.
Yeah, it's a very hard scenario because you know there's a lot of things that go into it. So it's definitely something that would have to be developed very well. But I think it's something that is very much needed. At least, you know, at least make it around probably, I think right now, the raise, if I were to guess, so just complete guess, would be around 45% of the money they make, they spend back into their payroll. So, you know, I think a number like 60% would be very good. But then you take a look into things like with what Stu Sternberg did and, you know, giving all these bonuses out to guys, it kind of, if you make him increase his salary and the amount of money he has to pay by, you know, 15%, 20%, whatever it would be, maybe even 5%, the amount of money that he has to, you know, go into donations, like cancer-free and everything, you know, it gets to a hard scenario where, you know, there might not be always, you know, a place for him to go out and spend money on things that can be done because he has to spend things on that need to be done.
Yeah, and that kind of is why we saw like that the yard sale that actually we both attended is that cultivation
great
of
event.
Wealth. It was an amazing event.
The people ruined it, but you know.
Well, I wouldn't even necessarily say that the people ruined it. I believe in part that the management.
It was a mix of both.
Yeah, it was.
There should have been a limit of, you know, one, maybe two items per person, maybe even four.
Which, for anyone who's listening and maybe isn't familiar about the yard sale event that went on, which I couldn't imagine, maybe other people listening in other locations, the Rays recently, in the last few months, had a yard sale outside of the Trop. Was it after it had been destroyed?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was well after.
Yeah, it was, I think it was around halfway through.
It was right before they started playing at Steinbrenner.
Yeah, it was, no, I believe it was in June.
It was in June?
Somewhere around there,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I kind of have some time blindness. I need to work on that. But, yeah, so what the Rays did is they set up some tents in the parking lot of Tropicana Field post-destruction from the storms, and they gathered all of the fan gear that they had acquired over the years that were sitting in, you know, closets and
old boxes. You know, if you went to the Trop, you would actually, and you looked down from the escalators, you would always be able to see those boxes, and that's actually what we assume they were giving away. You know, there's no way to know what was actually in those boxes, but we're assuming that that's what it was.
Yeah, and there was, like he said, there was a lot of just kind of stuff sitting around in the Trop. It almost looked like a hoarder house for some parts.
Yeah.
But then, they set up tents in the parking lot of Tropicana Field post-destruction from the storms, and what they did was they said, hey, if you pay us $20, you get about a medium-sized, kind of almost looked like a plastic tote bag, and you, as much as you can fit into that bag, you're leaving with. You can take home.
And, you know, there was actually people that came there, and, you know, they actually gave away some pretty cool stuff, like the skateboard.
Oh, yeah,
and there was people that just took all of them.
Yeah, no,
you know,
it was very,
was
it was first
tickets.
Come, first serve.
Yeah, but it got to a point where it's like, you don't need 10 raised skateboards, right? Like, leave some for everybody else, you know.
That's the problem, is they did nothing
to
combat the resellers. Yeah, they did absolutely nothing to combat the guys on
the
Whatnot
hats,
and Facebook
the hats
Marketplace.
The hats that we got, I saw people walking out of there with boxes of them.
Yeah, like
and
entire
we
crates.
Saw guys that had, you know, those large size boxes who were just carrying, like, just
which
the entire thing.
They had bought bags. They had spent probably upwards of $240 just to get that. But then they were taking these large cardboard boxes and just stuffing them in the cardboard boxes and walking out in truckfuls with
them. And there was people. There were some that were yelling at them, but at the end of the day, they really couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason. And, you know, it was a very young event because they had never.
Yeah.
It was very early.
And that's something that really. I mean, what are the odds of that happening again? You know,
I honestly don't know. I would say in the next 10 years, maybe once or
maybe,
twice.
Yeah, maybe
because,
10 years from now.
Yeah,
because
a lot
or
of
actually,
times they overproduce the merchandise for specific events, like when Randy was in Randy Land, or you know,
I got
before
a few
the Wander
from that
Franco
too.
Situation.
Oh no, they can't give anything from that away.
Yeah, but I'm saying like when players move on, or they overproduce merchandise that doesn't end up getting sold or taken at the end of the day. They have to put it somewhere. They don't just give it out, and so they. Are probably going to look at how many bags they sold and how much wealth they were able to accumulate from that day, you know, because they at that time they were operating at a loss. They had overproduced all of that equipment, all of that merchandise, all of that everything, and it was sitting there. And
they
know,
gave
that was
two free
money.
Tickets away to everybody.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing. With every purchase of every bag, you got a voucher for 2 free tickets. And there was one other thing I thought. It was like a meal.
Free hot dog.
Yeah, like a free hot dog at the ballpark. Me and my dad ended up taking those tickets and going and seeing Baltimore Orioles game at Steinbrenner. And so, yeah, that in and of itself was worth the $20 to go and, you know, and get those tickets.
Yeah. Now, moving on, I see you're wearing a Mike Evans jersey. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, as we were just talking about, my hot take was centered around him. Mike Evans, dude. He got injured.
It's so unfortunate.
That Monday Night Football game, he had... I cannot talk about Mike Evans enough. You wore his jersey on the first ever rendition episode of the Between the Lines podcast radio show. You talked about him and you gave all of his statistics. But for me, what I have to talk about him as is just the memory and the nostalgia. Mike Evans is the football player that got me into football. I'm 17 years old. I was born in 2008. I grew up watching Jameis Winston to Mike Evans. Those were my first memories as a Buccaneers fan. I love Mike Evans. You know, I think you can ask any Buccaneers fan how much they love Mike Evans. He is a name that, you know, he's a household name for many, many fans in Tampa Bay. And he's like the Evan Longoria of the Bucs, right? He's a guy that is just so remarkably close and tied to the franchise that his name and likeness will probably be used till the end of time for the Buccaneers. And I can't say enough good things about the man. We actually saw him in person very close when we went to the Buccaneers 50th anniversary documentary premiere.
Surreal feeling. Being that close to Tom Brady and, you know, Ali Marpet and all these great Tampa Bay Buccaneers legends. It was
Doug Williams, Jimmy Giles.
Met John Gruden and Jason Light.
We were sitting 2 rows behind the Glazer family, which anyone who doesn't know,
I think we were 1 row behind because there was a little half row.
Yeah.
So we were, I think, you know, probably 2 seats in front of us, or no, 1 seat in front of us and maybe 2 seats to the right. You know, there was people of the Glazer family.
Yeah. And it was absolutely
very,
incredible.
Very amazing event.
Yeah, but seeing Mike there and just seeing him walk in, and keep in mind, obviously, this was before the injury. This was, I think, just after the preseason had ended. You know, Mike Evans walks in the room, right? And everyone gets quiet for a second because it's like they feel someone's presence, like some like person just walked in.
Yeah.
And then
he's important.
Yeah. And then immediately, once everyone sees him walking in, they start cheering and chanting Mike. Like, if you, I don't know many people.
He means so much to this city.
Exactly. And I don't know many people, if any at all, that could command a room like that, could walk right in and everyone, I mean, I'm talking everyone, feels their presence.
Yeah. I mean, the part that kind of makes me the most sad about it is seeing Lavonte David, who's another one of those Buccaneers who, you know, obviously has been here forever and he's been this absolute stud for so long. And we're so blessed to watch Mike Evans and Lavonte David not only just be superstars for our franchise and be playing for us for their whole career, because every team, I mean, obviously not the Rays actually, but, you know, almost every football team has a guy like that. But seeing them stay so healthy and stay so consistent, it's really a different kind of feeling of watching elite play, but always knowing you're going to be able to see it.
And this isn't a negative
season
thing.
Season in and season out.
But going back to my hot take, that's part of the reason why I'm so I don't want Buccaneers fans to expect a Mike Evans swift return. I don't really want fans to be expecting a Mike Evans immediate return, a postseason return, because for so long he has been one of the longest tenured players on the Buccaneers. He has stayed healthy. He has given everything he can on the field every single time he met the turf. And, you know, he really just, he's an outstanding player, and he's done everything he can for the last 12 seasons, and he's kind of reached that point where it's time to slow down, look back at the past, look at what he's done, and accept that we very well could have seen Mike Evans' last play on the field. And I have to preface that by saying one more time, and I'm not going to keep talking about this, but I want to see Mike Evans play again. I desperately Everybody does. I love Mike Evans, and I've always loved Mike Evans.
Other than just maybe like Saints fans and Marshawn Lattimore.
Marshawn Lattimore has some beef with Mike Evans. Maybe he doesn't want to see him return, but I definitely do, as well as everyone else in Tampa Bay. I just don't necessarily think it should be as soon as possible.
All right. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, you can tell that I'm not wearing a jersey. Now, I'll explain that. The jersey's too small. I have it with me. But what we're going to do is, since you're talking about Mike Evans, I have a baseball jersey, but I want to get into some Bucks picks before I talk about my jersey.
Definitely.
So, tell me, what are you thinking about the Bucks game this week?
Bucks game this week, I don't necessarily think it's going to be a cakewalk for the Buccaneers, but
it's definitely a game that they have to take more serious. You know, division rival, you know, obviously any team that's not good, you feel like you can win.
The bottom of the NFC South.
Yeah.
So.
But at the end of the day, it's a division rival. They're going to play up due to the fact that they want to beat us. They want us to fall down because obviously they hate us.
It means it's better for them if we are losing.
Yeah. Even if they're not winning too.
Yeah.
It's at the end of the day, the Saints players are all going to rise to the occasion, and we can't just fall down because we think that they're a bad team.
Exactly, and you kind of saw it in last year against the Broncos, where obviously the Broncos are a better team than the Saints, but the Buccaneers kind of overlooked them since they had the Eagles coming in the house next week, that they didn't necessarily pay as much attention to them as they should have. And I think after that Detroit loss, which everyone was kind of expecting it to be a much closer game, I think they do still have a lot to prove, and that's another thing is... talking about stuff to prove, I don't think the Bucs have to prove anything as far as their power rankings, even though most power rankings have them at 7 or above, which is just insane.
It's, yeah.
After one loss after a loss to a team at the top of the NFC who's performing with a good defense, a good offense, at home, prime time, in front of thousands of streaming fans, when the players injured the Buccaneers players... I don't think that power rankings should be reflective of the betting odds. I think they should be reflective of the actual talent on the team.
At the end of the day, it's really just who has the most hype right now.
Yeah, it really is.
The Bucks were number one
universally. And betting odds, that's what it also is.
Yeah, the Bucks were number one universally, and then, you know, they lost, so the NFL was like, oh, well, they don't have as much hype anymore. Let's drop them down. They're still in the top 10 because people will make a fuss if we
drop them down. Which, keep in mind, it's not just the NFL as an individual organization.
It's CBS, it's Fox Sports.
Exactly, it's ESPN, CBS, Fox. It's all of these, you know, social media sources that are coming out and saying, hey, you know, the Buccaneers that have been succeeding and running at a high level since the start of the season, they lose, they've lost twice, but they lose one game to the Lions after being ranked first, and they immediately drop to seventh or below. It really doesn't make sense. Yeah. I don't get it.
But do you got any keys for the game? Because I've got one thing that, you know, I feel like if the Bucs can do, which you could say this about any team in any game, but I feel like they really have to get the run game going. We saw the frustration with Todd Bowles on Josh Grizzard for kind of abandoning the run down two scores in the first half. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, you have to get the run game going, and even if it starts slow, you have to stick with it, because if you're passing 48 times or 44 times, whatever it was with Baker Mayfield, even if you're succeeding at that at a high level in completion percentage, the odds of you winning that game are not high unless you're still running the ball 30 times, because...
Well,
you know,
Josh Grizzard is still a fairly young offensive coordinator. Yeah. You know, this is his first year in the league as a full-time offensive coordinator.
Yeah, first time calling plays, too. So, you know, I don't want to put all the blame on him and say we need to fire him, because we don't, right?
Oh, but yeah, not at all.
There's, you know, it's something to learn from. And I think his lesson was that, you know, just because the run game hasn't been amazing and just because we're down two scores, it's still the first half. Let's get the run game going. Let's heat up, and then let's take the momentum back.
Well, and you didn't see much of this on the negative side in Detroit, which is actually surprising considering it was a Monday night primetime football game in Detroit, which is one of the hardest stadiums to play away in a primetime
which,
game.
Which, by the way, they said was not nearly as bad as the playoff game that they played in just 2 years ago.
Well, but I do think that it's important that the Buccaneers make the most and execute on special teams. And what I mean by special teams is punts, kickoffs, kick returns, you know, extra points, field goals. This season so far, you've seen the Buccaneers holding a lot. I mean, historically, a lot.
I was just about to say
punts.
That, you know, Cameron Johnson has been a phenomenal punt returner, but the stats won't show it because I feel like I would say this season he's probably had about
Cameron Johnson's been a top three returner in the league easily, and I've watched a lot of NFL. The only other returner I would say, Devontae Turpin.
Yep.
But also the young rookie in for the Seattle Seahawks,
Torrey Horton.
Yeah, he has been incredible returning the ball this season.
But
so
Cameron
far.
Johnson has had some amazing returns. You know, he hasn't had that touchdown, but he's gotten to what feels like the 50, 40, opposite 40, you know, yard line almost once or twice a game at this point, but it just feels like every time it's just getting called back for holding or, you know, really just holding.
Yeah, and it's
ridiculous.
Part of being a football player is you really have to go out there and you have to give it your all every single play, and not to say that the Buccaneers haven't been giving it their all. I think that actually the holdings have been an effect of the Buccaneers players trying to give it their all and really play a physical brand of special teams. But you need to tone it down a little bit. You need to make it less egregious. You need to make it cleaner. Yeah. And you just need to execute on a level where the referees won't be able to call it every single time, which on most special teams plays, there is holding. There's holding on almost
every
all
play.
Of them.
Every
but
single
it's,
play.
It's when there's players that I've literally seen, Buccaneers, I can't name off the top of my head, but corners, nickels, that they literally, on the blocks, they grab the players and they shove them to the ground in an open air space. And that just doesn't work. That's going to get called absolutely every time because, like I said, it's egregious. It's very easy to see. And so, I think if they are able to be more effective with their chances on special teams, I think if they can get the penalties down a little bit, keep the laundry off the field, then, yeah, they'll be more effective overall because that's where a lot of the momentum is built early on in the game,
yeah.
In the special teams moments, in those big crunch time, you know, areas where you're playing a team like the Detroit Lions where, you know, you need that momentum, or the Saints where you need that momentum. And when we're talking about momentum being started and taken away from the Bucs in an unfair manner, you have to look at the referees and the calls that have been made recently. Going back to week one, the Buccaneers have had a lot of trouble with these referees, whether it's a call early on against the Jets, whether Emeka Egbuka made a catch and it was inbounds or out of bounds.
That was clearly inbounds,
but it was called out of bounds and was never reviewed. Or, for example, a Bucky Irving drop tackle that was never, ever reviewed against
the
Eagles.
Which he got injured on and is still out. Ridiculous.
Or, you know, even just the little plays, like, or not even little, the big things, like what's never ever happened in the NFL ever. This is the first time it's ever happened, a double review after a play has already been called. And so let me set the scene for you. The Detroit Lions are on defense, the Buccaneers are on offense. What happens is Cade Otton is being thrown the ball by Baker Mayfield. He receives the ball, gets it down to the first down marker. However, there is a defender on him and kind of getting the ball the entire way with his hands on it. It was a little unclear in the moment who had completely come down with the ball, but it was in Cade Otton's arms when he hit the ground. He had achieved the first down. The Buccaneers take the first down. The referees call it a first down. Baker Mayfield gets everyone up to the line. They hadn't challenged it yet.
Or no, they snap the ball.
They
and
snap
then the
ball.
Lions
yeah,
are going to
call Mayfield
a challenge
snaps
after
the ball.
Ball's already snapped.
Baker Mayfield snaps the ball, which the referees, they blew the whistle, which the play clock was running. So the Baker Mayfield snaps the ball. Buccaneers have the ball. The play's on. The referees blow all of their whistles, actively stopping an ongoing play to review a previous play. That is the first time in NFL history that has ever occurred. You can look back in all the history books. You can look it up. Google's free. It has never once happened. And the Buccaneers had to face a double review after that insane
refereeing
option.
Yeah, they then reviewed it.
Yeah, they then reviewed it once. They said it was inconclusive and that they were still going to give the Buccaneers the first down. They reviewed it a second time, and they saw that actually the Lions came down with the ball.
And, I mean, it was pretty clear that the Bucs had it.
The Bucs had the ball the entire way. There wasn't a doubt in my mind. If it was the other way around, if it were a Buccaneers defender in the area and it were Sam Laporta for the Detroit Lions, I would have conclusively said, Sam Laporta has the football. He was down after the first down. It was clear there is no review needed. However, because, I don't know, the Buccaneers have some type of vendetta, or the referees have some type of vendetta against the Buccaneers. Come over here. The camera's right here. How you doing? How you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. I love the bunny outfit. Is it Halloween day here at Ferg's or something?
It is Halloween on Central today.
Halloween on Central. That's why all the...
Over 100,000 people expected here in downtown St. Petersburg.
Wow.
We're out there. I'm DJing live right here on Central Avenue. We will see you out there. Have a
yes,
great
Yes, sir.
Day.
Thank you so much. Where can we find you? Where can we find you?
Right out here under the tent, on Central.
Right on Central.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Now, I think this is a great time to tell everyone to come down here to Ferg's.
Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill, right off of Central in the Edge District of St. Petersburg, Florida, across from Tropicana Field. I mean, there is not a better place to spend Halloween or celebrate Halloween than Halloween on Central today. Thank you so much for stopping in. He's already out.
Amazing. Yeah. He ran out of there.
He ran out. He was excited, man. He had that. He was on that bunny, dude.
I mean, he grabbed that candy and ran. I mean, come on. All right. Now, we got some NFL picks to talk about. I'm up on you again. How about that, huh? How about that?
Let's take a look at it.
You know,
right
last
here.
Week, last week I was up to you 10-8. Now, what's the score?
The 20-17.
Wow.
2017, the year of our Lord.
I'm just way better. I'm just way better at these picks than you.
I don't know about that, but
I mean, proofs aren't there.
From the proofs in the pudding, I guess.
Yep.
I guess that's what you were trying to say. So the NFL schedule from last week, right? We had the LA Rams versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Rams came out with that. I actually picked the Rams to win. You picked the Jacksonville Jaguars to win that, but they lost in a blowout fashion.
And we already knew that was going to happen while we were recording. You know, that was the 9:30 game, and we were watching it here at Ferg's.
Yeah, but we did make these predictions before that game started.
Yeah, we make them on Saturday, so, you know.
Yeah, there's no way around
you
that.
You know, the Thursday games we don't pick, though.
We both had the Bears
to win. Which
we might
have to get on that.
We both had the Bears to win. The Bears won. We both had the Dolphins to win. The Dolphins lost, so we both lost.
Who did the Dolphins play?
The Dolphins were at the Cleveland Browns. They lost 31-6.
Jeez, yeah. I still would have picked the Browns again.
Yeah, no, you picked the Dolphins. We both picked the Dolphins.
I still would have picked the Dolphins again.
Yeah.
I don't think the Browns are good at all. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah, and we both had the Kansas City Chiefs versus the Raiders winning. The Red Chiefs won. We both had the Eagles against the Vikings. The Eagles won. We both had the Panthers against the Jets. The Panthers won.
Easy.
We both had the Patriots against the Titans. The Patriots won.
Easy.
I had the Giants over the Denver Broncos. You had the Broncos over the Giants.
And how about that, huh? What a game that was.
Yeah, that was an incredible game. I completely thought I was going to be right on that pick up
I
until
was
the fourth quarter.
That. You know, yeah. Broncos went up, what was it, 19
It was
to
19
zero,
points in the fourth
and
quarter.
They had the over Giants kicker the missed, quarter. What was it, two extra points
yes.
or two field goals?
Two field goals.
Yeah, I mean... What a win for me there. That's a big win too.
It really should have in the long run. It should have been a New York win.
But at the end of the day, those mistakes are
that fourth quarter fall apart needs to be studied. I cannot believe that the New York Giants are still holding onto their defensive coordinator after that. I had the Colts. You had the Chargers. The Colts won 38-24.
Absolutely,
which makes sense. You know, I'll take that win. That we both had the Packers get over the Cardinals. The Packers won. I had the Commanders. You had the Cowboys. The Commanders lost in pretty bad fashion, 22-44.
I was actually watching that game.
I didn't watch
as well.
That game.
I was kind of flipping between.
We both had the 49ers over the Atlanta Falcons. The 49ers won 20-10. And
easy.
Then Monday Night Football, the Buccaneers at Detroit.
Can we actually just not talk about that Buccaneers game anymore? You know?
Well, I don't want to talk about it, but the Bucs did lose 9-24
in Detroit.
Yeah, we
both got that wrong.
We both had it as the game of the week, and we don't talk about it.
Yeah,
I had the Houston Texans at the Seattle Seahawks. You had the Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks did win 27-19.
Easy. I don't know how you would pick the Texans.
Yeah, I thought the Texans coming off of a bye week would be, you know, refreshed, rejuvenated. They would be playing a better brand of football, and especially after coming off that huge win against the Baltimore Ravens.
The offensive line is just horrible. But, they've got to fix it.
Yeah, that offensive line is atrocious.
Trade for Evan Neal.
Every single play that C.J. Stroud got the ball, he was running for his life like a crazed man, a lunatic. It was so sad to watch. But now we have our picks for this week. This week's schedule.
And unfortunately, you know, I don't know how many people listening have looked at the football schedule this week,
yeah.
but it's
It's not the best.
It's a lot of lopsided matchups, and I don't even believe we have a different pick here. So let's get through this quick.
Yeah, we don't have a single difference. So every single pick that I read off, we both completely agree on. We both have the Falcons over the Dolphins, the Ravens over the Bears. We both have the Bills over the Panthers. We both have the Bengals over the Jets. We both have the 49ers over the Texans. We both have the Patriots over the Browns. We both have the Eagles over the Giants. We both have the Bucks over the Saints. We both have the Broncos over the Cowboys. We both have the Colts over the Titans. We both have the Packers over the Steelers. And we both have the Chiefs over the Washington Commanders on Monday.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, that's just such a... I mean, there's what, 2-3 decent games? You know, Cowboys and Broncos, that's not bad.
Bears and Ravens might be a good one. Although, is Lamar still out?
No, yeah, Lamar got ruled out.
So, I honestly might pick the Bears to win that.
And, you know, the NFL is investigating that, by the way, because they talked... It was... I didn't look too much into it, but it was something regarding a practicing issue, and the Ravens maybe, I don't know, maybe lying about the practice report. It was a whole weird scenario. The NFL is investigating it, which
Lamar Jackson was apparently practicing at one point this last week, but now it's kind of up in the air. No one really knows what was going on because he's still ruled out for the game on Sunday.
Yeah, and it was looking like he was going to be likely, and then just randomly at, you know, probably 3 o'clock.
The 11th hour.
Yeah, you know. On a Friday, they were like, oh, Lamar Jackson's actually going to be ruled out due to something with practice. And it's just a whole weird scenario, you know.
I don't know. John Harbaugh and that entire team right now, they aren't looking very sharp, I have to say.
You know, that Packers-Steelers game on Sunday Night Football, that might not be too bad of a game. You know?
I like
but
that.
At the end of the day, it's just...
It's the A-Rod's return, you know.
Yeah, but it's at Pittsburgh. So at the end of the day,
I mean, it's his first time playing his old, you know, team that he won.
I believe he's
Super
already
Bowl
played
on.
The Packers.
No, he has not. This is going to be the first time. He never played with the Jets because he was injured. This is the absolute first time that he will be playing the Green Bay Packers.
Unfortunately, it's not at Lambeau Field. But
and funny enough, this is actually a little statistic for you. Aaron Rodgers may become, if he wins against the Green Bay Packers, which is, I don't think he will, but if he does, he will become, I believe, the fourth quarterback in NFL history to beat all 32 teams.
Tom Brady's
in the NFL.
Up there, Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
Tom Brady's
absolutely,
up there. Peyton Manning's
absolutely
up there. I cannot think of the other name at this moment, but Aaron Rodgers would be joining that club if he is able to come up with a win against the Green Bay Packers.
Okay, now I got a list of names here, and you know we can go all day about the Bucs should trade for this guy, but you know at the end of the day, these are some players to watch out for trade, and you know we're not going to talk about too much of the Bucs should trade for this guy because at the end of the day, it's almost worth it to trade for any improvement.
Really,
like you could say, oh, the Bucs should trade for Trey Hendrickson. Well, yeah, obviously, you know. So, you know, some names to look out for is obviously Trey Hendrickson, Logan Wilson, also a Cincinnati Bengal. This one's interesting, and this one we actually might have to talk about here. Brian Thomas Jr. The Jaguars are apparently shopping him.
Listening
to trade talks for him. What are your thoughts on that? That's really interesting.
I don't think that's going to come to fruition. I think Liam Cohen is trying to create some pressure in the locker room a little bit to get guys on their A game, get guys performing at their max level. I don't even know if is that a completely verified report? Like, has Liam Cohen said that he's looking into trade rumors?
Well, Liam Cohen doesn't choose the trades.
I'm saying, like, has their front office even acknowledged that?
No, but some very verified insiders of, you know, The Athletic have said it.
So,
you know, obviously it still could come out as false. You know, we saw Arson Judge actually sign with the Giants a few years back and, you know, Carlos Correa as well. So, you know, not every report can be verified 100% true, but they are right.
Yeah, I don't really know if Brian Thomas Jr., only in his second year after having an absolutely incredible rookie year, I don't think many franchises, if any at all, especially not the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are kind of in a rebuilding state, even though they're having a really good year, I think, even though Brian Thomas Jr. is having a slow year, I don't think they would immediately look to rectify his position group and look for another receiver or even someone on the defense or O-line because they need his talent down the line if they want to make a playoff run. I think they need deep talent to expose defensive backs in the secondary of many teams.
And I think they need a as many receivers as they can get for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, because, well, yeah,
and
exactly.
They need him as cheap as possible.
Trevor Lawrence, needs weapons. Trevor Lawrence needs weapons.
Because he's not good.
He's not good.
He's not horrible.
I think he was going into the league. I think he may have been one of the more overrated quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah.
For sure. Especially coming out of Clemson, that loss to in the national championship to Joe Burrow. But I do think that he has a lot of talent. He still shows every game that he performs that every time he has a great performance, like he beats the Chiefs or something, or, you know, he goes off, has a good game. Everyone's so quick to say, wow, Trevor Lawrence is everything that we've been saying he is. But the moment he has a couple bad games or he isn't looking like his,
it's the inconsistency.
You know, yeah, he's just not super consistent. And like I said last week, you need consistency to play as a start, as a franchise quarterback in today's NFL. And that's just one of the biggest things he struggles with. I think when he gets those right moments, though, and he gets in his own, or he gets his head right and he, you know, he focuses and locks in on a game, I think Trevor Lawrence is really as good as many of the top quarterbacks in the league. I just think, look at it. He's 6'6". He can sling the ball 100 miles. It's just like, you know, that consistency with the accuracy and also the rapport that he has with his receivers, which I wouldn't want the Jaguars. Even though I'm not a Jaguars fan, if I were a Jaguars fan, I wouldn't want them to move on from Brian Thomas Jr. because it seems that, you know, Trevor Lawrence doesn't have a lot of great chemistry so far with Liam Cohen. We've seen him argue a couple times with him on the field, on the sidelines, whatnot, brush him off. I think if you want a successful team, you have to start building good chemistry as soon as you can, especially in a rebuilding period. And I think you want to keep the good chemistry that Trevor Lawrence, Brian Thomas Jr., Travis Hunter started to have, Trevor Etienne. You know, I just think you want to keep that skill group as tightly knit as you can.
Now, if you could see him get traded to one team, what would it be? Because I got my answer.
If I could see him get traded to one team, I would have to say maybe the Colts.
Colts, wow. I would say the Giants. You know, pair him back up with Malik Nabers for the future. You know, that would be...
That would be ideal.
I think that would be the best scenario.
But
now,
that's
I got
also talking about... That would also be like saying, you know, Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Even though they're on a different level, it's just because they played at LSU together. I think Brian Thomas Jr. As a weapon for, you know, Indiana Jones for the Colts would be ideal.
Now, just a few more names here. Bradley Chubb, Jalen Waddle, Chris Olave, Jalen Phillips. You got Jordan Brooks, Breece Hall, Tariq Woolen, Jacoby Myers, Mark Andrews.
I'm not drinking the Chris Olave Kool-Aid. I don't know. I'm not.
The concussions scare me.
Yeah.
I think he's already had
very
five
injury
in the
prone,
NFL.
Four,
it's,
pretty sure.
You know, it's, yeah, it's... That's crazy. Azeez Ojulari, Boye Mafe, Evan Neal, Alante Taylor, Arden Key, Jermaine Johnson. Those are some of the key names to look out for. Now, I want to get into some college football.
Okay.
Because it was a pretty crazy week. Now, I've got some scores here. You know, I'm going to go through ranked matchups only.
Mm-hmm.
So, on Friday night, we had Louisville actually upset Miami.
Can you say that one more time for me?
Louisville beat Miami.
Not Louisville?
Is it?
It's Louisville.
Oh, whatever.
If you said Louisville in front of a Kentucky native, they would probably kill you.
You know what? It's whatever. I'll take the blame on that one. We had Michigan beat Washington 24-7. We had... Oh, wait. This is... Okay. I'm back on the right track here. I don't know why.
Some technical difficulties in the studios,
ladies
and gentlemen.
Friday night... Oh, that was 2 weeks ago. All right. So, we had Indiana versus UCLA, they blew them out 56-6. Georgia Tech beat Syracuse 41-16. How about Georgia Tech, huh?
Georgia Tech is on a great run night.
What a season by them.
The Yellow Jackets look electric.
Washington beat Illinois. Shout out Devin Culp. Shout out Jalen McMillan.
Yep.
Alabama beat South Carolina. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ole Miss beat Oklahoma. You know, BYU beat Ohio State. We got Vanderbilt beating Miami.
Can we talk
Missouri
about BYU and Ohio State really quick?
I didn't watch the game. I was at work again.
I mean, jeez. I mean, that BYU Iowa State
41-27.
Yeah, I mean, it was BYU looks like a top contender right now. BYU, especially with that
ranked number 11, and they're gonna keep rising if they keep winning.
Bear, I forget his last name, but the quarterback, he wears number 47. BYU's quarterback wears number 47. Do you know that? He is,
what a number for a quarterback.
Yeah, no, he is just such a dog. I absolutely love him. A lot of guys are kind of not super high on him because if he's a true freshman, he's young. He doesn't rely on the pass a lot. He's a scrambler. but I think he is an absolute dog. I think he has so much potential, and I cannot wait to see him play further into his college career.
Now, we have Vanderbilt beating Missouri 17-10. That's a close game, number 10 versus number 15. Cincinnati beat Baylor. Louisville, beat Boston College. Michigan.
At least you're not calling it Louisville. If you were calling it
Louisville, that would be a crucifixion.
Yeah.
LSU lost to Texas A&M. LSU might not be ranked after this week. Already number 20, they just got blown out 49-25 versus Texas A&M. Obviously,
Texas A&M is also a great team.
Top-ranked team.
And also, Garrett Nussmeier has been dealing with a lot of injuries this season. So.
And, you know, Miami beat Stanford, Oregon beat Wisconsin, Tennessee beat Kentucky. Not too many upsets, but one here is Houston beating Arizona State 24-16.
Can we talk about, I like Tennessee this year a lot. I like Joey Aguilar, obviously the former Appalachian State quarterback, which I'm a fan of Appalachian State on the side of, you know, South Florida. But getting to South Florida and teams I'm a fan of, South Florida lost in the last 2 minutes of the game
at Memphis
in a horrible, horrible fashion. Obviously, this team has looked great all season. Alex Golesh, he has done numbers for this entire organization. I say organization, it's a college program. But he is a great coach. His biggest defect, which I noticed, I mean, clearly against that game against Memphis on Saturday, was his time and clock management. In the last two minutes of the game, Byron Brown, the USF Bulls were up by four. Byron Brown rushed the ball for a first down. Clock was, you know, in college football, when you get the first down, the clock starts running back when you get back to the line of scrimmage. What an ideal situation! In an ideal situation, what you would do? I believe there was 3 minutes left in the game. What you would do in an ideal situation is you would get back to the line as quick as you can, chew some clock, get the clock running, blow the whistle or blow the play, snap the ball in the last second of the play clock, just so you can run the ball three times, chew as much clock as you can, get down to the 2 minute warning, march the ball down the field a little bit more, maybe mix in some screens, maybe use Byron Brown's legs, get him out, get him the first downs, maybe kick a field goal if you can get in that range. We did not see that. We saw
USF. And we saw the missed field goal, too.
Mika Gramatica did miss a 52-yard field goal right to end
the
game.
That's a hard kick, for especially for a college kicker, and only a sophomore.
He is a sophomore, and he, you know, he's done numbers this season. He currently holds the record for the longest field goal in USF college football history. But, you know, you can't make all of them. That was one that he, you know, it would have been great if he had made it in that high-pressure environment in that last situation in the game that would have taken it to overtime. But, you know, you can't expect the pressure. That's the thing with college football and, you know, all football these days is too much pressure is bestowed upon the kicker. And, you know, you're supposed to have kickers for those moments where you need a couple extra points, you need some security, but you can't every single game expect your kicker to come out with the win. And especially not as a young sophomore kicker, Nico Gramatica, son of Bucks legend Martin Gramatica. I think the game overall in that last fourth quarter, in the last 3 to 4 minutes, should have been managed a little cleaner, a little better by Alex Golesh. You know, you got to work on that time management. You got to work on the situational, you know, 3 minute, 4 minute, 2 minute situations in practice. And I imagine that's what they're going to be doing a lot of in practice this week going into their next game, their next matchup.
Now, we got some MLB to talk about, because the first two games of the World Series have been absolutely crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolutely insane. How about, let's actually start off with game one. Let's go in order here. Game one, how about the Blue Jays putting up 9 in the sixth inning against
the
Dodgers? Yeah. Who was it? It was Addison Barger, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, Addison Barger hit the grand slam, you know, actually grew up in the Tampa area, Nathan Lukes.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pretty solid game himself, you know.
Also, Bo Bichette, first games back from his injury, is great. He's
and he
a
didn't
Tampa
play
local.
In
he went
game
to Lakewood.
Two, actually. Yeah, he didn't play in game two. You know, they're probably taking it slow, but they do want him out there in, you know, an elimination game or a this is a must win game. So
Shohei
Ohtani earlier.
Shohei Ohtani bringing out more hits for more homers. By the way,
how about Shohei Ohtani doing his best Aaron Judge impression? Huh, hitting a home run to bring the score from down to 8 from down to 6.
Yep.
All right. I mean, or actually from down to 9 to 7.
Yeah.
So, you know, just pointless homer, but adds on to his postseason success. Going to get him more marketing. You know. And Alejandro Kirk actually having himself a great series as well, had a homer. When the inning already felt like it was over, you know, typically when you get that grand slam, you feel, all right, well, that's all the damage that's going to be done. And then they go out there and get more hits. When I saw that home run, I was like, are the Blue Jays ever going to stop hitting?
Yeah.
Is like, it just, it got to a point where they just kept doing it, and it was like, all right, that's the end. And then they just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
So it was phenomenal to watch. Now, going on to game two, the Blue Jays lost, and the Dodgers got to tie up the series 1-1. How about Yoshinobu Yamamoto with the complete
game? Oh, yeah. Masterclass. Masterclass.
Back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
First time since 2001. I don't know who did it, but first time a pitcher has thrown back-to-back complete games in the postseason since 2001.
His arm must be so worn out by now. I can't even imagine. I hope the Dodgers can rely on the back end of their bullpen a lot more, and they're able to produce, especially with Klasnow.
I mean, in my opinion, the Dodgers' bullpen is not good.
It really is. The back end, for sure. That's why I'm saying they
I don't think they have a back end, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean,
at the end of the day, I feel like it's Roky Sasaki and, you know, Alex Vesia, who was there, is, you know, unfortunately dealing with a personal issue, and that hasn't came public yet, but wishing the best for him now. What was that?
Kershaw's...
I'm not sure.
Word on him? Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I've even seen him. I don't even know if he's on the roster, I wouldn't be surprised.
About retirement, but
he's retiring after this year. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, going into Yoshinobu Yamamoto's stat line, 9 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts. And how about him not leaving the stretch from, I believe, the 5th inning for the rest of the game? I mean, you're never going to get a guy out of rhythm if you can't get him to change his windup.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's absolutely ridiculous. Will Smith had himself a great game, 3 RBIs. Max Muncy had himself an RBI as well. You know.
Just an all-out good game by the Dodgers. A clean game on both sides of the ball.
The Dodgers, if I were the Blue Jays, my goal would be to get the Dodgers starter. And obviously, it's another one of those takes where it's like, do this every game. But especially with the Dodgers and how weak that front end to middle end of the bullpen is, get the starters out of the game.
Yeah.
You have to... If you're the Blue Jays, you have to tell your guys, go in there and take an at-bat. I don't care if we get no hit for the first 5 innings. If we can get the Dodgers starter, because all 5 of them are nasty.
Yeah.
All 5 of them are absolutely dominant. If you can get them out of the inning, out of the game by the 6th inning, you've got yourself in the game.
That's the problem with the Dodgers, is when you're a franchise, looking at how you're going to attack the Dodgers and try to win the game, it's really a coin flip. Because you don't know if you want to focus more on the hitting aspect of it against that, you know, terrible 4 in the bullpen that can just rip your offense apart, or if you want to focus on the defensive aspect, getting your pitchers up and against those incredible hitters that they have, Mookie Betts, Freeman, you know, literally everyone in their lineup.
Shohei Ohtani, there's so many.
Of course, Shohei Ohtani, who's also a pitcher in their bullpen.
Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Muncy. Kike Hernandez is probably the greatest postseason hitter of all time.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't show up in the regular season, but the moment the postseason clock hits, he just walks in.
But for the Blue Jays, I feel like the Blue Jays typically actually do match up very well against the Dodgers. You know, a powerhouse of a team who hits the ball very well. But the Blue Jays, I would say, are the best defensive team in the entire MLB. You've got guys like Alejandro Kirk. Dalton Varshow is a Platinum Glove Award winner, finalist, I believe. You know, Isaiah Conner-Falefa, Bo Bichette. Andres Jimenez, I believe, does have a Platinum Glove.
Which is ironic, because I was just watching that 2020 clip of the error by Kiermaier when Brett Phillips hit the line drive.
Kiermaier?
Yeah, it was by Kiermaier.
Kiermaier errored? He was on the team.
It was a Kiermaier I'm thinking of the Kiermaier error when oh my God! I just saw I forget what it was, but the clip. It was like 2 days ago. It was a rerun from a game that the Rays had played. I can't remember. But going back to the MLB postseason discussion.
Actually, real quick here, I completely forgot about this. So I've got my jersey here, and I'm not wearing it because it is a youth medium, right? I can fit in it. It's a little tight, you know. But I am wearing, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see it right now, a David Price jersey. Not wearing, holding a David Price jersey. And the reason I wanted to do that is because
phenomenal
Dodgers pitcher as well.
Mm-hmm.
For the postseason, you know, he made a big impact, and I kind of wanted to bring it up to there. But before I do that, I want to read you some stats on David Price and his career, because it was a phenomenal career.
Mm-hmm.
He placed second in the 2010 Cy Young, barely losing out to Felix Hernandez. He won the 2012 Cy Young. Mm-hmm. He was a five-time All-Star, over 2,000 strikeouts, and had a career 3.32 ERA. I mean, a phenomenal career. And I bet you the Dodgers would love to have a guy like David Price back in their bullpen.
Oh, yeah, especially because right now bullpen, against the Blue Jays.
You know, the Dodgers are a team that's supposed to have such a great bullpen. You know, they've got guys like Blake Treinen who is amazing, but hasn't been that good in the postseason. They've got Tanner Scott, who they've got on a four-year, $76 million deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Dodgers' bullpen should be good, but at the end of the day, it's not, and mm-hmm. that's all that matters right now.
Yeah, you know what? And going back to that game, I was thinking of the Brett Phillips hit against the Dodgers. I confused it with Kevin Kiermaier because of that error in 2021 against the Blue Jays play at the plate. That's what I was thinking of. I completely meshed those two together in my mind. But, you know, coming aside from this MLB postseason discussion, I have some Tampa Bay.
I heard you have some Rowdies and some Lightning news.
Yes. So getting to the Rowdies as we speak right now, the Rowdies season just ended last night. There was a potential scenario for the Rowdies to acquire a postseason entrance where the Rowdies, they beat the Detroit FC, and then after beating Detroit FC, they, I believe it was Indy 11 FC, would have had to lose or draw in their match, which it didn't even come down to it because the Rowdies ended up in a draw with the Detroit FC. So at the end of this season, Leo Fernandez announced he would be retiring as a long time player Forrest Lasso. So that's two guys in your midfield that you were losing. You know, that's two big blows to the Rowdies. You know, Leo Fernandez was on the Rowdies for nine whole seasons. He was a 14-year player in the USL. It's just you don't want to see him go. He's one of those guys that, you know, just showed up every game he had to for the Rowdies. Loved watching him play. Loved supporting him as a Rowdy. The news broke late Wednesday night. And, after last night, he is retired. Going to the Lightning, however, the Lightning recall forward Dominic James from the Syracuse Crunch. Other notable players on the Tampa Bay Lightning who have played for the Crunch in the American Hockey League, which is the AHL, you know, go as far as Anthony Cirelli, Eric Chernak, Andre Vasilevsky, who I wore his jersey in the first rendition of Between the Lines. You know, Dominic James, though, the former Chicago Blackhawk prospect, he has been doing very well for the Crunch, and I expect him to help build some momentum for the 1-4-2 Lightning currently. I think bringing him up is a good move. I think it's a move by John Cooper to kind of reassess the current situation, because even though the Lightning typically do have a slow start entering the season, they heat up much closer to the playoffs. I do think that Dominic James move is a move by John Cooper to try to build some momentum for the Lightning. And then just to wrap things up for the Rays really quick, since we were just on that baseball discussion, some young players to watch maybe this next season in the minors, currently in the Arizona Fall League. Jackson Bymeister, the RHP, he's been seeing some success on the mound.
Great player. Came from Zach Eflin trade.
He's thrown 5.2 innings, only giving up two earned runs. He has racked up seven strikeouts due to the fact that he has one of the best arsenals in the entire Fall League. He has so many versatile pitchers. I would definitely wouldn't want to face him as a hitter. I imagine the 6-foot-4 prospect will probably see the field for the Rays in the next couple of seasons. I imagine.
I'd hope so.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that I was pretty excited for when we got Zach Eflin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you got anything else for me?
I actually do not, other than, you know, the fact that Bucky Irving and Chris Godwin Jr. are ruled out officially against the Saints. And
you know what? We're missing key players, so I want to bring this up. Michael Penix and Drake London have been officially ruled out for the Falcons today.
Really? I didn't know that.
So Kirk Cousins will be starting, and looks like Darnell Mooney will be wide receiver one for him.
Wow, looks like I need to make some moves on my fantasy team.
Yeah, maybe need to pick up Darnell Mooney out there if you're listening. Maybe a big game for him.
Luckily, I already have Darnell
big
Mooney.
Big Kirko Chains slinging him the ball, but I think
I think it's about that time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Between the Lines this afternoon on Florida Sports Streams, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on Central in St. Petersburg, Florida. I've been Tristan Kennedy with my co-host Jake Magruder. Once again, thank you so much for listening.